One. All right, welcome to the Lakers Legacy Podcast, where we are less than 2 weeks away from the start of a new season, start of a new legacy, and you're probably wondering, who the hell are these guys talking on my iTunes again? Well, we're wondering the exact same damn thing, and unlike the rest of the Lakers this offseason, we have not been breakfast clubbing with regards to podcasting, and we've got some major sharpening up to do before the season starts. But we're back, and that's what we slowly intend to do. So, Alan, what's going on, man, and how have you been prepping for the start of the season? And have you gotten NBA 2K17 yet?
I haven't gotten it yet, but I will. I definitely will.
So the best part, as I'm sure you already know from our friends, of NBA 2K17 is the facial recognition, facial mask that you can put on your my player. And it is, okay, first of all, it's really hard to do. Has anyone told you this yet?
I've only seen pictures of my friends, and they do resemble them.
Yes, it's freaky. It's freaky,
really,
right?
Weird.
It's super weird. It's super on point. So in order to use the facial recognition on your My Player, you have to download this special app, NBA 2K17 app on your phone, and then it'll have you use your camera to facially scan your face. And so essentially you have to either use your front camera or have someone take a video of you, and you have to slowly move your head centimeter by centimeter to the left, centimeter by centimeter to the right, very, very slowly so that it gets every single snapshot of your face.
Yeah.
And if you use your front-facing camera, your FaceTime camera, it's nearly impossible. Like, I haven't been able to do it yet. I might actually have to have you do my facial scan later. So my tip to anybody trying to do the facial recognition thing is I think it only works if you have somebody else doing it so that they can steady the camera and then you can slowly move your face to the left and to the right. If you're using FaceTime, it'll always have like an error or it won't scan completely onto the mapping of NBA 2K17. But it did partially do it, and I saw like half of my face onto this like mannequin thing, and I was like, oh god, it's freaking scary. But I can't wait to actually get it right. So if anybody hasn't gotten 2K17 yet, do that. I think that's the best part about it.
Nice.
Facial recognition.
Now, questions, are you actually going to do the My Player, like the career mode thing? Or are you?
I mean, seeing my face on it makes it more likely.
It actually makes you want to do it, for sure.
You know?
Because usually it gets a little old after a while. But yeah, now that it looks like you're actually in the game, it'll
help. Exactly. All right, so before we get started, per usual, please follow us on Twitter, at Lakers Legacy Pod. Please also rate and review us on iTunes, because the more you rate and review us, the more times EG and Leanne will crack a smile this season, because that fool is stone cold, straight faced, like Spock, and needs some tickling. Like, yee. So, Alan, where do you think Yee's ticklish spot is on his body, if you had to guess?
This is going to be... I gotta say, behind his left earlobe.
Behind
his left earlobe. People probably don't get there often because he's so freaking tall.
Yeah.
You know, so
he probably doesn't even know it yet. So
probably not. Yeah, he doesn't seem like the tickle loving type guy.
Exactly, and we'll get to more EG and Leanne and his media day later. As today, we're gonna kind of just do a pre-lit podcast for the season and just look at the landscape of what's going on off-season wise for the Lakers and recent news that's been going on, as well as our main topic, which will be a short one, but it'll be on Brandon Ingram coming off the bench to start the season. So yeah, if you want to know EG and Leanne's ticklish spot and have him smile a little more in his interviews, please rate and review us on iTunes. Also, if you want to send us any mail or Telegraph Pass questions, please email us at thelakerslegacypod@gmail.com. Speaking of rating interviews, I'm going to have Jordan Clarkson read this one because it's very relevant. So, Jordan, take it away.
Hey, what's up, guys? Really excited for the season. This one's called Best Lakers Podcast Around. This comes from The Flat Pino. 5 stars because the more sub-80 scores Jordan Clarkson gets on Magic Mike, the better motivational speeches Coach Mermes will give the team to heighten team chemistry.
You know, Jordan, your voice is amazing on that Magic Mic. I know it always gives people like 95, but you should be getting like 120.
Not gonna lie, Coach. Thank you for the clarification. When I saw Magic Mike, I thought he meant like the movie, because I do like to dance. But
Jordan, I thought you were Filipino, son.
I mean, I am. You know, I'm proud of my heritage. Could definitely bust a move out there. But I guess I gotta be on this mic, because that's what the guy's talking about.
All right, cool. Thanks, the Filipino. I'm guessing this guy's Filipino, and he knows all about Magic Mike. So thanks for that review. With that said, let's kind of just run through Lakers offseason news and get things started. Some frivolous news. LeBron James attended the Rams game today.
Kobe, Kobe, Kobe.
Man, y'all are ruthless, son, but that's pretty funny. I mean, that's true Lakers
Dude,
Kobe
that's,
fandom.
That's respect, right?
That is respect, indeed. And I'm sure
if he were irrelevant, no one would care.
You know,
so.
Interestingly enough, I think LeBron was chanting Kobe, too. I mean,
I wouldn't be surprised. Exactly. I bet his kids got a kick out of that. And I like how his kids were wearing Rams hats.
Yeah,
not,
that's awesome.
Not Cleveland Browns.
Yeah,
so
that's cool. That's good showing out by the fans. The Rams actually won and beat the Seahawks. So,
seriously.
Hey, they don't play very fun, but whatever.
Not at all. So boring.
And then some other news. This is more actually relevant news. You know, Shaq got inducted to the Hall of Fame last week, and that was really cool to see. Quick question, Alan. Were you like a Kobe or Shaq guy starting off?
My first Laker jersey is Shaquille O'Neal jersey.
Nice.
So, definitely, as a kid, I was more of a Shaq guy. He's just so freaking dominant. I used to pretend I would dunk like him all over the place and, like, you know, spread my legs out while, like, hanging on a elementary school 6-foot rim or whatever. So yeah, I loved Shaq's personality. I used to do the head bobbing up and down dance where he like strained something in his neck that one year. So yeah, love Shaq.
I think it was just because of the virtue of how I started as a Lakers fan. I was more of a Kobe fan, but I did always appreciate Shaq's class clowny, jokery personality. He was always the big quotable, and you know, when it came down to actually praising Kobe, he really gave it up to him. What did you think of Shaq's speech?
I thought it was good, honestly. It was classic Shaq, pretty much exactly what you would expect out of him.
I thought it was like a microcosm of Shaq's career, where on the one hand he's praising Kobe and then also throwing
yep,
a little shade at him as well.
Yeah, throw a jab in there. I just had to do it, man. I cannot wait for when Kobe gets inducted, dude, because he's going to throw more than one, I'm going to guess.
So that happened, which is really cool. Congratulations to Shaq. Well-deserved. AI and Yao also got inducted, and both of them were really funny in different ways. AI, I loved AI from the moment that I started like watching the league. He captivated me just as much as anyone not named Kobe. And yeah, he revolutionized the game, really, as a guy who just looked like another guy, but somehow could take a pounding and get to the free throw line, and he played much bigger than himself. And Yao just played for 6 years. Yao played dominantly and played much funnier than he looked. He's much funnier than he looks, is what I'm trying to say. And he really showed that at the Hall of Fame speech, taking a jab at, not a jab at AI, but a jab at the practice speech, and also taking a jab at Dikembe Mutombo, saying that he looked like the oldest up there besides Bill Russell and someone else. So that
Bill
was,
Walton.
Bill Walton, think, yeah, so that was, yeah. That was pretty funny. So yeah, well-deserved to those three, and really brings back good memories of like the early 2000s, mid-2000s for me, which is, for me is like the height of the NBA and when I fell in love with basketball. So, all right, so before we get into the Lakers stuff, I was going to throw out a Telegraph Pass question from one of our listeners, and this comes from Tyler Abbott, at Tyler Abbott, ABBOTT91. If you were the GM of the Lakers, what would be the 5-year plan to be in contention? Alan, what would you say would be your 5-year plan, and would it even be a 5-year plan, or how would you gauge it? Would it be sort of contextual year by year, or what are you thinking?
So 5 years, we're looking at 2021. God, I'm going to be 32 years old.
Oh, you didn't need to throw that out, but
you're going to be 30. I'm just like trying to grasp what 5 years looks like
now.
Man, so the guys on our team are going to be entering their primes. They'll all be about in their mid-20s. I mean, you would hope by then that we are contending in the Western Conference, top 1, 2, 3 team consistently year to year. As far as like individual players and how they're coming along, I would really hope D'Angelo or Brandon Ingram are going to be the 1-2 punch. They really need to be the leaders of this team. D'Angelo, I would think, would be cracking his first All-Star appearance by then. So, yeah, in terms of individual accolades, that's where I see it. I mean, you see these guys in their Breakfast Club meetings and whatnot, and, you know, Kobe told all the guys at the end of the season, it's important for you all to work out by yourselves this summer and improve your own games, but work out together so you can really learn each other's tendencies. And they obviously took that to heart. They've been doing it all summer long. And if they could keep that up for years and years to come, you look at teams like the Warriors, whoever's on top right now, after 5 years, their time should be out.
Yeah.
With the exception of the Spurs, just because they continue to retool, but whatever.
Yeah.
So, yeah, as I know that isn't very specific. It's pretty vague, and it's self-explanatory. Of course, you want to be contending within 5 years, but I do think it's extremely realistic. Lakers continue to get compared to the Thunder when they had Westbrook, Durant, Harden, etc. Obviously, we don't want to blow up our team, you know, the way they kind of have. And in terms of salary cap and which players are going to be able to stick around at that point and what they're all going to want, it's obviously very up in the air, but you would hope if it does come down to trading somebody, you have to get something good in return, not a Kendrick Perkins type thing.
Yeah. If I were the GM, just in terms of the specifics, I think it's going to be year-by-year contextual-based kind of thing, as any GM would, you know, any smart GM would operate by. I don't think there's a set five-year plan. I think there's somewhat of a rough draft that you can go many different ways in, depending on how your players do year by year. But as far as year one goes this year, I think it's going to be what we all have been assuming it's going to be, where we just want to show incremental progress, get to the 30-33 win mark, show that the young guys have improved drastically and that there's actually legit pieces that other free agents can look at. And realistically, free agent-wise, we're going to be looking at people in D'Angelo Russell, Jordan Clarkson's class. Maybe earlier than that, maybe Anthony Davis, guys like those. We can forget about the guys who are superstars right now. But if somehow the Lakers in year one show the promise that we need, then year two, this upcoming summer, you can use Luau Deng's cachet, you know, as we've been talking about, him reaching out to other people, telling them, hey, these guys are the real deal. Luke Walton is a coach that you want to attach yourself to. So join us because we're on the up and upswing. And then hopefully maybe 2017 we get a pretty good free agent, doesn't even need to be a prime free agent, like a Gordon Hayward type or a Serge Ibaka, and slowly build the team that way. And then I think part of the five-year plan will always be year by year, as we actually have assets now and movable money and flexible cap space. I think Mitch is going to go back into his trading ways, you know, his magic Mitch ways, and pull a rabbit out of the hat. You know, he's never been shy to make trades. The reason why we haven't had trades is because we haven't really had assets or guys other teams wanted, you know. For once, we actually have that with multiple young guys on really good contracts that he can move around. So I think starting this trade deadline, he's probably going to be looking to see what guys are out there that are underappreciated or their teams and them are having some strife that he can trade for that he sees redundancy on our team. You know, it's consolidating talent and whatnot. So starting this trade deadline, I think Mitch will start looking at trades to make the team better. And then that'll happen next summer. And year two, you're just hoping that we're, after a 33-win season, we're in the 40-45 range and almost entering into that eighth seed playoff territory range in year two. And then by then, it should be easier comes every summer to really make a good pitch to free agents, and hopefully you'll actually get a superstar to come. So I think the five-year plan really is year by year. I know that sounds like a cop-out answer, but it kind of is what it is. And I think the good thing to realize is that we have assets, and Mitch is going to be trading people. I mean, don't get too attached to guys, but he's not going to make a dumb trade, you know. He's never really made a dumb trade. He's made questionable decisions with regards to signing free agents and whatnot. But at least when it comes to trades, he's usually made the right move for the benefit of the team. And even in the scenarios where he has made a dumb move, a.k.a. trading Caron Butler for Kwame, he's always found a way to make up for that and fix that. Kwame for Powell, for example. So, yeah, the five-year plan, I think it's figure out who your cornerstone pieces are. Like you said, Brandon Ingram, D'Angelo Russell, maybe Nance and Randall. Who knows? Just figure out who the corner pieces are. And by year five, they should be all-stars or superstars. And by then, hopefully, you have the proper free agents who want to join those guys. So that would be my five-year plan as the GM of the Lakers. Always looking, waiting to see if opportunity strikes, make the trade, and continue to build up the resume of your team. And I think that'll just come naturally with the training facility, Luke Walton, the kids looking better, changing the culture around your team and the narrative that it is a new day, it is a new legacy, and you can hop on board and be part of that and make a name for yourself as a Los Angeles Laker in this new era. So
yeah, and going back to not getting attached to guys, and this wasn't Mitch as the GM, but when Jerry West was around, you know, we traded Nick Van Exel and Eddie Jones,
right,
who were both all-stars, perennial all-stars, yep. You know, for a few years. I really loved Eddie Jones, actually, when I first started watching basketball. And I remember when they traded him, and we get this guy, Glenn Rice, who was also an all-star caliber dude. I was very disappointed because Eddie Jones was very flashy. Like, he and Kobe were, you know, those extremely athletic wings that was really fun to watch. So, yeah, I could definitely see that. Again, we don't want to attach names, you know, who's going to be the Nick Van Exel and the Eddie Jones who gets traded for player A or B or whatever. But I would not be surprised within the next 5 years if all that stuff happens again.
Yeah, I mean, Mitch has been known to do those things, and it's always been for the betterment of the team. He traded Glenn Rice after a championship season.
After 1 year.
And that was actually a bad move, so maybe that's a bad example, because he traded him for... Did he trade him for J.R. Ryder, or he just traded him, and then J.R. Ryder signed?
Sorry, I don't remember.
He did sort of replace him,
so to speak.
Right, right. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, he has a history of doing that, but I trust Mitch and his decision-making. So, you know, we'll just have to see. And, you know, there are other examples of this. Like, the Golden State Warriors have done this to their fans' dismay. But really, and it being a good thing, if anybody remembers, Monte Ellis used to play with Steph Curry. And when they traded Monte Ellis, their fans were, like, in uproar. They're like, why would you trade Monte Ellis? But they traded him for Andrew Bogut, a position that they needed to fill. And Andrew Bogut ended up being a integral piece to their championship, like, winning ways as a defensive, great passing big man for them. So it ended up working out for them, even though on paper Monte Ellis was the flashier, better player. So there you go. And I expect Mitch to do the same thing. So let's not freak out. He's going to strike when opportunity presents itself, and we should analyze everything with a calm, objective demeanor. So yeah, that is a long-winded answer to the five-year plan question if I were the GM. So let's just move on to some off-season news and observations that have been going on.
I realized that when I was born, my arm would tingle. It would just tingle all the time. And I asked my mom what it was, so I got an x-ray and it was just ice there. But I don't know.
Obviously, on Friday, we had Gian Lian Sanity Media Day, which is really random because we haven't had it for really anybody else.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, we didn't have time for Luau Deng or Mozgov, really, but Yi Gian Lian. Well, I guess for obvious reasons, like, he had a whole Chinese contingent there to ask him questions and whatnot. So what did you see out of his media day, and did you listen to his stone-cold, stone-faced interview?
Yeah, yeah, I listened to about 7.5 minutes of him.
Were you falling asleep?
No, actually, I was very, very awake.
Okay.
Just waiting for a nugget to grab onto, and there really wasn't anything except for when that one guy kept asking him about how much money he gets to keep because he's a Chinese citizen and, you know, the government, and he kept trying to, like, shake it off, and he just chuckled eventually and was like, you know, what do you think happens,
well, you know,
guy?
The funny part about his interview was if you looked at his facial expressions, he always kept having this
weird eyebrow.
And he's like, what the hell? What did you just ask me? Yeah. It's like almost like he's offended. It's really funny.
Well, yeah, because one guy was like, you know, some people say you're like the next Yao Ming.
He's just like,
and he just gave this look like he smelled someone fart or like, something. Like, he was not pleased with several of these questions.
Yijian Lian has this WTF look. Regardless of whether or not it was offensive or not, he just he's always really confused and offended. But
His body language definitely he doesn't hide it. That's if you know the sound bites aren't great, but the body language is. So sure. I guess that's one thing we could take away from him. You tell he's intelligent. Like, he knows what type of player he is. They ask, are you more of a 4? Are you more of a 5? He totally gets the versatility thing. He's like, I don't care. It doesn't matter. I'll play whatever. I feel comfortable in both. There was a video of him just shooting around by himself from the outside, and stroke looks great. So, I mean, obviously that's what we're going to be using him for primarily on the offensive end, is stretching the floor. Don't look to post him up very frequently, and if he is posting up, it's going to be mid-range, like 16, 17 feet.
To that end, though, he admitted that the reason why he feels like he's ready to come back to the NBA is because he feels like he's gotten stronger and more confident. I think those are the two big takeaways from his interview when people were asking him, why now? Why do you want to come back? And he was just like, I've been training to be back for a while now, and, you know, the Chinese League has significantly improved since the last few years, and he feels like, you know, he is stronger, he is more confident, and with the way the NBA is going, I think he recognizes that he can be a very integral piece to a team as a stretch five, or still a stretch four, but more likely stretch five on our team. So I think he sees his own versatility, and it'll be interesting to see how Luke and him shake things out in terms of his role, but I just like the confidence for now, and you have to be confident, really. Obviously, the one time he perked up was when somebody was like, are the Lakers big? And he's like, oh yeah, they're big. They're big. So that's all the E stuff. One thing that I also picked up on was he said he's been working out there for like 2 weeks already with the guys. So, I mean, that's great to hear that the guys are really, really ingratiating themselves with one another and really getting to know each other's games. And that's what you want to see out of the young guys, taking initiative on your own. And I also saw Kobe Carl shooting in the background. So shout out to Kobe Carl, new
Defenders head coach.
George's son. So yeah, that's all the EGN Leanne stuff. Some other news. We had Larry Nance making comments on how different it is to have Luke Walton and kind of not saying what he's comparing the difference to, but it's very obvious he was throwing major shade at Byron Scott. He pretty much said Luke is the complete opposite of someone who's uptight and hypercritical. And I was like, oh shoot, tell me more, man. But it's funny because Larry Nance is so nice and so politically correct that it's funny that even he, it's like you don't even need to dig too hard to be like, oh yeah, that's Byron. But when you have someone as nice as Larry Nance even throwing shade at Byron, I mean, that tells you all you need to know, you know?
Yeah. The funny thing is, whenever these guys are describing Luke, it isn't just a description of his characteristics. It's what he doesn't do.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
It's not, oh, he's positive, he's this, he's that. It's, oh, he's not negative. And he is very approachable. Like, you can totally tell there's this underlying thing of he's everything our old coach wasn't.
Right.
You know, whereas if all of these guys were rookies and they're just getting Luke as their first NBA coach, they probably wouldn't be saying all the things that he isn't.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's good to hear that they are really feeding off of Luke's energy, and that's really what Luke is providing the guys. Just energy to be themselves, energy to make mistakes and not feel down on themselves. Like, for Luke, it's like Larry said it. He's a total California guy. We're going to ride the wave and be okay because we know the context we're in. We're not trying to win championships here right now. We're trying to build a culture from the bottom up. And it's going to take patience and understanding, which is the biggest thing. With regards to what the guys are actually working on and what Luke says they've been focusing on this offseason, D'Angelo Russell has said that he spent the offseason focusing on building strength in his hips and lower body for obvious reasons, because he wants to continue to hone in on that post game, and that should be a major difference for him, where he can just bully smaller guards. He already could in the first place because he's taller, but having that core base down there would be huge. So that's good to see from D'Angelo. With regards to Jordan Clarkson, he says he's been focusing on improving his handles, which is great because sometimes he's been too loosey-goosey.
It's like Speedy Gonzalez out there, dude.
Yeah.
Just running as fast as he can without the ball.
Right. And obviously his perimeter shooting as well, which is good to hear. So hopefully that catch-and-shoot game will continue to be more consistent this upcoming offseason. And he didn't mention it, but I'm sure he's working on his defense. And Laker film room guy Pete Zayas actually posted a all Jordan Clarkson defensive analysis of Jordan, pretty much. And it was pretty much everything that we've been harping on. But one thing that I observed was the reason why Jordan Clarkson gets burned so much is instead of chopping up his feet and sliding, he jumps with both feet and, like, jumps to one side. And that's why his guy can just burn him, because he has to regroup.
Yeah.
You know, when you're jumping off both feet, like you're doing some weird, like, bunny hop, like, you should be like
you know? Yeah. It gives you more time to adjust if you have to go a different direction.
You have to chop it up.
If you're airborne, And all that force is coming down. Yeah, exactly.
Like, you only do that bunny hop if you beat the man and you anticipate where he's going, which I think he's trying to do.
The drive or something.
But
yeah.
On just normal screen and roll plays, you should be chopping up your feet left, right, left, right, left, right, and then right, yeah. Left, right, left, right, yep. Right, left, right, left, if the other guy is going a different direction. And
that's why you do sliding drills.
Exactly. Yeah. But with Byron as the coach, I guess they didn't emphasize this enough, or they didn't point out what he was doing wrong. So all these things are very fixable on Jordan Clarkson's end. It's just, who the hell was coaching them? Oh yeah, it was Byron.
Yep.
And one thing at Laker Film Room guy was saying was that too often the Lakers would pressure way up top and go over the screen when you're 50 feet away from the basket.
Right. Oh,
what's
sure.
the point of going over the screen 10 feet away from where the three-point line even starts?
Yeah.
The worst-case scenario is he pulls up for that three, and that's a long shot.
Yeah, and then you're willing to give that up.
And when it's Jordan Clarkson who can't chop up his feet properly, that's even worse. So it was just I was just, like, having, like, seizures watching this again. I was like, oh, God. It's, like, one, Jordan Clarkson's bad, and then two, like, his coach did him no favors. So.
Yeah, that was all. That was Jimmy Ayan. He was
Jimmy.
Defensive guy. And, you know, he's from the Showtime Lakers, so he must be.
Jimmy eats world. whatever that means. so, yeah, Jordan Clarkson, I'm excited to see what he can do this year, especially with all his new money. So I'm sure he'll be motivated to show that he was worth all that. Anthony Brown, I think he's working on his shot. He said which is actually really cool, he's recovering from a stress reaction in his right foot, and he's also working on strengthening his hips. Hips don't lie, in order to defend bigger forwards, which is great because he was already really good at fighting through screens. So the fact that he's going to get stronger should be great. Hopefully he's just working on his shot and gaining confidence in that. With regards to Julius Randle, Luke Walton has actually praised the progress he's made with his jumper, which is exactly what we want to hear this offseason. So I'm really excited for Julius Randle's progression in that regard, and Luke Walton also praised Larry Nance with the progress he's made on his jump shot. So, you know, those two battling out for that power forward position should be really interesting to see. With regards to Zubats, you brought up an interesting observation just watching his interview. What have you seen in Zubats this offseason?
He looks like he's put on some muscle, that's
yeah.
for sure. He was just wearing, like, a gray Lakers t-shirt, but his neck looked a lot thicker, and not like in a fat way, more like his trapezoids are a lot bigger.
Yeah.
So means he's been working out his back a lot. His shoulders do look a lot more broad, and his chest looks like it's filled out too. So
looks a little more defined.
Oh, totally. If you think about him in summer league, he was pretty lanky. He kind of looks like he's just went through a major growth spurt after puberty or something. But he definitely looks more like a man at this point.
Yeah, for sure. And apparently Luke Walton has said Zubac has developed the skyhook.
Yeah, baby.
Apparently this guy can just do everything. He learns really fast.
Yeah, we've seen pictures and some videos of him doing it, and it's awesome.
With regards to Nick Young, he's lost 20 pounds from, I guess, depression. I don't know. No, that's mean. I honestly don't know why he's still on this team, especially now that we're hearing Brandon Ingram's going to be coming off the bench. But, you know, maybe just to have a backup. I don't know. We'll see what happens. I still would be surprised if he made it full way through the season on this Lakers squad. One thing to note, Lou Williams is apparently displaying a playmaking presence, which is good, because especially if he's coming off the bench with Brandon Ingram, we're going to want him to be playmaking and not hogging all the shots. So hopefully that is what's happening, and I think Lou Will knows that he's playing with guys, or he's competing with guys like Jose Calderon and Marcelo Huertas coming off the bench. So I think that's pretty much a good rundown of what's going on with the guys this offseason outside of the continuance of the Breakfast Club that they're putting on and just continuing to work really early with each other and work hard. D'Angelo Russell made a comment, I forget when, but he pretty much said, you know, I don't really care what the haters say because I know I'm in the gym and I know I'm working out, so they can say whatever the hell they want, but at the end of the day, I know I'm working, which is a great thing to hear from him, you know. With that said, let's see what other things have been going on. Timofey Mozgov's even doing stuff because he helped Russia finish Eurobasket qualification with a perfect record, 4-0. He averaged 12.6 rebounds, 1.5 blocks. So it's good to hear that he got over whatever groin injury he was going through during the Olympics, and that looks like he's ready to go too, which is awesome. So yeah, with that said, I think we're going to jump into now the important topic of this past week, which is learning that Luke Walton has decided to bring Brandon Ingram off the bench on the outset of the season.
You play basketball?
Yeah.
I hate that sport, man.
So, Alan, what are your thoughts on Luke Walton saying that Ingram will be coming off the bench and that we need to start? Yeah, we need to think about how we're going to use him for 82 games, pretty much. So I think the starting lineup will look like D'Angelo Russell, Jordan Clarkson, Luau Deng, Larry Nance or Julius Randle, and then obviously Timofey Mozgov. So what are your thoughts on Luke Walton doing this, and why should we not freak out, or why should we freak out? Is this another Byron Scott scenario? What are your thoughts?
It's not surprising at all for me. If I were the coach, I would do the exact same thing. You know, Luau Deng is a formidable player at this point. This is not a Ronnie Price type situation where we're wondering why the hell is this guy even getting minutes. He really, really sucks. So just in terms of the depth chart, obviously Ingram's ceiling is higher than Deng's at this point. But as far as who is the better NBA player right now, it's going to be Deng. So it only makes sense to play him. And in terms of just a fit within that starting lineup, it makes more sense to have a veteran guy out there. And I know that sounds like rhetoric, but when I just try to envision this team with a bunch of first and second year players and then Mozgov, it just doesn't really make sense.
Right.
You know? So I wouldn't say it's the same situation as last year when Randle and D'Angelo got benched out of nowhere. One thing I do like is that Luke has already said it at this point in September.
Right.
I feel like Byron would do that coach thing, and Byron isn't the only one guilty of this. A lot of coaches do it. The media will ask, so who are you going to start today? And it'll be an hour before game time, and they'll be like, oh, you'll have to wait and see.
Right.
So it is nice that Luke is transparent, came out and said it. And I think Ingram, based on what we've seen from his personality, is going to fully embrace being in this reserve role. I'm sure he's still going to get a decent amount of minutes. It's not going to be like 15 minutes per game or some crap like that. I'm absolutely fine with it.
I guess what would you say about people who are like, well, you can have Luau Deng out there and just shift Brandon Ingram to the two spot and bring Jordan Clarkson off the bench, which is what you envision him as in the future, as a sixth man. So why wouldn't they just start D'Angelo Russell, Brandon Ingram, Luau Deng, Julius Randle, and Mozgov? What would you say to that?
I just don't see Ingram as a two.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't.
And I think the other thing is that the thing that separates this from a Byron Scott scenario is that Luke Walton actually gave detailed context to the reasons why.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, we're not going to throw him into the starting lineup right away out of concern that he might break down by the end of the season, which is you don't want to hit the rookie wall. If anything, you want him to start off slowly and then gain momentum and take that with him to the next season. You know what I mean? Most rookies really gain their second wind at the end of the season when you know things are out of play or you're out of contention, but you can really get your confidence going. I think that's what he's talking about. Like, if he struggles out of the gate and loses that confidence, it might take a lot of time to build that back up, you know? So at least you want to see him work gradually, and Luke Walton's being upfront about it, like you said, and that's the good thing. And he says, you develop the young core by rewarding them when they play well. So the other thing is, it's not like Luke Walton has this lineup set in stone, like Byron would. It's not like, you know, Byron would always say, oh yeah, for the next 20 games, we're doing this. Luke Walton has said none of those whatsoever. He pretty much said he's going to start off coming off the bench. Now, if Brandon Ingram clearly outplays Jordan Clarkson or outplays Luau Deng, Luke Walton's going to find a way to get that guy in the lineup because it's so obvious, you know? It's not one of these super rigid and set in stone Byron Scott declarations. Luke Walton is just saying, I'm going to start him off because I think that's the best thing. But if he proves me wrong, I will probably put him into the starting lineup and find a way to make that work. Now, obviously, if it so happens that Brandon Ingram is like averaging 20 points off the bench and he's still coming off the bench, then we can question Luke Walton, right?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Of course.
But I have, at this point, we give him the benefit of the doubt just because the guys seem to trust him and really respect him at this point. So I think it's totally not the same as Byron Scott. Luke Walton has legitimate answers and reasons and rationales behind this, and I agree with all of them. You know, he says, well, you don't want to burn him out too soon. You want to just ease him into it, and if he's playing really well, he's going to reward him. He says, you develop the young core by rewarding them when they play well, which is exactly what you want to hear. So I'm all for Luke Walton taking the gradual progressive approach with Brandon Ingram. I guess let's look at the bench unit that Brandon Ingram will be playing with and see how we think it's going to shake out. On the one end, I do feel like it would be beneficial to have Brandon Ingram play with guys like Jordan Clarkson and D'Angelo Russell to help him out a little bit, because as we saw in Summer League, he's a little hesitant to be playmaker Brandon Ingram right now. I think he's more comfortable being like, let me set this screen or let me curl off of screens and like just catch and shoot for right now. So I feel like it would be beneficial to be with D'Angelo Russell and Jordan Clarkson. But at the same time, I trust Luke's ability to shuffle the lineups, and there will be moments where D'Angelo and Ingram will be playing together, obviously, even if Ingram's playing off the bench. Again, it's not a Byron Scott rotation where Ingram's off the bench and he's never going to play with the guys with that he plays well ever. With, you know? Yeah. I'm sure in, like, practice and in training camp, Luke will know, oh, Brandon Ingram and D'Angelo Russell play really well together. I'm going to stagger them so they play together, unlike Byron would do.
Yeah.
I think that's what's going to happen. So right now, I think the lineup would be Jose Calderon, Lou Williams,
yep.
Brandon Ingram, either Julius Randle or Larry Nance, and Tariq or E.G. Anlian.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
So that'll be the bench unit. And, you know, I think that's a decent unit for Brandon Ingram to be with, especially because now that I think about it, Jose Calderon and Lou Williams are good veterans for him to learn under, and he won't necessarily have to deal with D'Angelo Russell and Jordan Clarkson's mistakes, now that I think about it. So,
yeah.
Any thoughts on the lineups and how you see him playing with a certain unit?
Yeah, I think to start, if he's playing with that bench mob, Calderon is a guy who plays very intelligently.
Yeah.
And again, I know we've heard those types of comments before with our backup guards, like, oh, well, Ronnie Price, he just plays the right way. That's why I love him. It's like, okay, no. Clearly, Jose Calderon is a more skilled and more versatile player than Ronnie Price, even though a lot of people will just think of Jose Calderon as this old guy who doesn't do a whole lot. He makes very wise decisions, and again, he can actually, like, shoot the ball and make passes on, like, Ronnie Price, the Bulldog. And as far as him being on the floor with Lou Williams for a lot, I think that's a good thing as well. Lou takes a lot of pressure off other guys on the team. If you need to get bailed out for a shot, he's shown that he's capable of getting his own shot, or at least getting fouled or something 17 feet away from the basket, fading to his left. I think it's a good thing. And he can learn from being on the floor with those guys who've been in the league for so many years now. They can encourage him, and they have the credibility to do that. Whereas, you know, some of our first and second year players, if things aren't going well on a particular night, maybe they're feeling a little bit flustered. You know, I don't see that being the healthiest situation for someone who literally just turned 19 about a month ago.
Yeah, it'll be too erratic for him. And even Lou will, you know, even though he might get into this ball hoggy type stage, at the end of the day, if nothing's going on in the second unit, you know you can give it to him to take the pressure off of them scoring-wise. So I think that should help. And the fact that Lou Will is taking on more of a playmaking presence is a good thing. And yeah, it's not like Lou Will has never done this before. He's averaged 4 assists before in his career, so he can do it. It's just a function of when you put Lou Will with a guy like Byron, Lou Will gonna Lou Will and do the Byron thing, you know, and just ISO, ISO, ISO. So it should be interesting to see how Lou Will fits into a Luke Walton type system. He might end up being like Leandro Barbosa pretty much for us. The more I think about it, the more I'm actually, I was never really down on it because I trust Luke Walton, but even more so, I'm more in praise of it because it just makes total sense right now. And again, the fact that if he shows progressive strides, he's going to find his way into the starting lineup somehow, or at the very least average 30 minutes and get, I don't know, 13 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists like we've been predicting. So I wouldn't worry too much. Even coming off the bench, I'm sure Luke will find a way to have this guy average 25 to 28 minutes, you know?
Yeah.
Hopefully in the 28-minute mark, but I think we'll see that 28 minutes happen more towards the latter part of the season for obvious reasons. And like I alluded to earlier, I don't know why Nick Young's on the team because I don't see any place where he fits, especially now that Brandon Ingram is going to be the backup 3. So I would still expect him to be gone or be traded or be cut or stretched at a certain point. And if not, I don't know. Good luck, Luke. I mean, use that guy however you will. I'm okay with Nick Young staying on the team as long as he behaves himself, you know?
I don't know.
That's pretty much it. With that said, do you have any other thoughts on the offseason? Brandon Ingram, any of the other young guys before we kind of close this one out?
It looks like these guys are just hanging out together a lot. Yeah. I know they all coached in that Power 106 celebrity game like last weekend,
right.
I think. So you saw Clarkson, D'Angelo,
Ingram,
and
August.
I think Tarik Black, yeah, and Zach August. So I feel like D'Angelo and Zach August hang out a lot.
Yeah.
I see so many pictures of these guys together, which is really funny. I'm really excited. It seems like they have great camaraderie. The fact that they're all willing to get to the gym at like 7 o'clock in the morning, not just for like the last couple weeks to get in shape for training camp, but since July. So it's really awesome to be seeing that. And then just, you know, one more thing on Ingram. It's different also because it's not like we drafted a number 2 and there's no one else on this freaking team at all.
Right, right.
We're not looking for him to be our number 1 guy.
Yeah.
Right now. That is for darn sure. If anything, D'Angelo's like the number 1 guy. Number 2 is arguably Clarkson, maybe Randall, but probably not. So then, as far as a third, fourth option, you're looking at Ingram. And is he really going to grow in that position as a starter? Or if you have him coming off the bench, it's a little bit easier to feature him.
Yeah.
If we didn't have any top draft picks the last couple of years and Ingram is like our first one in 25 years, then okay, maybe you should start the guy.
Yeah.
But that's not the case.
Right.
So if you look at some other like lottery type teams, it's like, oh, well, that guy started and he was like the number 5 pick overall and he started every single game. It's like, well, chances are he was one of the few top draft picks on the team.
Right.
So contextually, it is a little bit different right now. There's just no rush.
And everywhere you look, you're excited because there's going to be 2 or 3 young guys at one point. So
yep.
Even if Brandon Ingram's not playing, he might even escape your mind. And then when he comes in, he's like, oh, yeah, Brandon Ingram's on
yeah,
the team.
Totally.
Now I can watch him, you know? So you're totally spot on with that assessment because we are in a new era. There's no more, you know, unfortunately, there's no more Kobe, but fortunately as well, it's just young guys, young guys, young guys. Now, if Luau Deng's playing 40 minutes and Mozgov's playing 40 minutes and Lou Williams is playing 35, then we have a problem, right? But I highly doubt that will happen. So we'll get to that when we get to that. But
just hearing that minute distribution makes my blood pressure rise, I can tell you right now.
And somehow that makes sense if you're talking about Byron Scott.
Yeah.
But like you said, there are so many young guys who are going to show improvements and that we can track that I don't think we're going to be complaining very often this season at all. If we complain, it's going to be because the guys are acting like boneheads and they aren't showing the proper amount of improvement that we want to see. But that's kind of more on them as well. So we'll just have to see. And so I'm really excited with how things are going. The vibes are as high as I've ever seen them. I think everybody's ready to take on that newness, you know, the changing of the guard, new season, new era, and it's a good time to be a Lakers fan and be a part of this city, really. So with that said, I think we'll close it out. Before we close it out, we'll just do another quick 2 wrongs make a right segment because we haven't done this in a while. So for the sake of time, I'll just come up with 1 wrong. Alan will come up with 1 wrong, and then I'll just throw it to you, or you can throw it to me for the 1 right. So Alan, I'll throw it to you first. Give me 1 wrong take you've had in Lakers history that you're willing to admit.
All right, so my 1 wrong, and it's a bit unfair, I'm just going to say it anyway. When the Lakers hired Rudy Tomjanovich after Phil, I was pretty optimistic. Obviously, he took two Houston teams, won the finals. He had the one Houston championship team where they were down, and then they came back and won the whole thing. The whole never underestimate the heart of a champion, Hall of Fame coach. So I thought that was going to work out pretty well for the Lakers. And for what it's worth, when he like took his permanent leave of absence, were we above 500 by like
we were
10 games plus?
I don't know if it was that much, but we were like right at 500 or something.
Yeah,
like
yeah. And considering we were just coming off of, you know, this dynasty and all that kind of stuff, he handled the situation, I'd say, as well as anybody. Unfortunately, his health took a hit. And, yeah, coaching in L.A. is just different from coaching in Houston, I guess, especially following Phil Jackson. And, yeah, his health just really went down the gutter at that point. So I thought he'd have a good run as a coach. I thought we would continue to make the playoffs and maybe get to, like, the second round, maybe Western Conference Finals once or twice with him at the helm. And because he was older already at that point, I anticipated just one of his assistants, you know, whoever that even, I don't even remember who was on his staff at that point. I think it was a lot of Phil guys.
Yeah.
Because Frank Hamblin ended up taking over that season. Mm-hmm. So the infrastructure of the team was actually pretty stable despite having a new head coach. So yeah, I thought it worked out well, but wasn't meant to be. Yeah.
I think on paper it made sense, the pedigree and whatnot, but like you said, health concerns. I don't think they even played particularly well. I really don't have an accurate assessment because it was pretty much just Kobe show all the time. But yeah, that was unfortunate. But to his credit, he's been working for the Lakers ever since then as well as part of their scouting staff overseas too. So good for him. My one wrong would be Shannon Brown. So everybody knows Shannon Brown because let Shannon dunk. He was a very exciting, electric player. And legitimately, objectively, when he was with Phil Jackson, he was a guy that Phil could use as a spark off the bench that really got the team going, a la Jordan Farmar, except much more dynamic and with his athleticism and whatnot. But I thought after his stint with the Lakers and Phil Jackson that he had really transformed himself into more than just like a bench like go-to player. I thought he really shored up his three-point shot. I remember out the gate one season, he like came in and made like six threes, and I was like, oh, shoot, maybe this guy has really honed in his game and really learned from Kobe, and maybe he's going to be like the next Trevor Ariza in terms of, even if he leaves the Lakers, he's probably going to find his footing and really take off from there, like literally and figuratively. Unfortunately, once he left the Lakers, he just couldn't do anything all of a sudden. And, you know, that's a credit to Kobe Bryant. That's a credit to Phil Jackson being able to use guys like this.
How many guys fall off the map after they leave the Lakers?
I mean, it's pretty evident. So that's my one wrong. Fortunately, it doesn't really bite the Lakers because the Lakers kind of, I guess, knew this and they let him walk, you know? And when he walked, he couldn't sustain his progress or improvement. So, but fortunately for him, he's been pretty good buds with Kobe ever since, I think, and their wives have been really good friends. So, the Shannon Brown era in the Lakers was still a fun time, especially because of the championships, obviously. So, he had his shine. So, yeah, that's my one wrong.
What's your favorite Shannon Brown moment off the top of your head? 3, 2,
block!
One. Yes! Atlanta Hawks.
Of course, yeah.
But it was a foul.
Everybody remembers that.
Kobe, his look when he's looking at the Jumbotron over there, he's like, ooh!
I think everybody remembers like the reaction as much as the block.
Yes.
Because
yes.
You see Lamar Odom howl like a wolf at the top of his lungs. And it's like the best image of that era of Lakers basketball and how tight that team was.
Yep, for sure.
They just loved each other, and you see Pau just, like, happy to be on the team and, like, rubbing Trevor Ariza's neck and, like, smiling.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just, like, an awesome snapshot of how much fun we had during that time. So definitely love that. All right, so do you want to take the one right, or do you want me to do it, since we have our both two wrongs?
You go for it.
Okay, so our one right today is going to be, funny enough, Trevor Ariza. Because when the Trevor Ariza trade happened, nobody really knew who this guy was, but I kind of did. I was following him in Orlando and New York Knicks. I'm sure you did because he played in LA.
UCLA.
And UCLA. Yep. So even though he didn't show jack squat his first few seasons, when we traded Brian Cook and Maurice Evans for Trevor Ariza, I was like, oh, shoot. I like that move. Lots of potential. This guy's got upside. He seems like he has defensive tools. And if he can just gain a jump shot, you know, this guy could be actually useful. And he ended up being way more than useful when he came in, because I think Luke Walton even gave up his starting spot to let Trevor Ariza play because he realized, hey, coach, I think this guy plays better than me, and he fits the starting lineup better. And, yeah, Trevor Ariza was an essential part to that first championship we had. And I think if he had been healthy, or even... Because I forgot in 2008 when we didn't have Bynum, I don't think Trevor Ariza was fully part of the team yet. So
no, he was dealing with some injury too, actually, right at that time.
So yeah, Trevor Ariza is one that I am happy that from the get-go I was like, love that trade, I think it'll work out. And it ended up actually working out way more than I had imagined. So that will be our one right for the day. So with that said, two wrongs make a right. If you want to shoot us your versions of two wrongs make a right, email us at thelakerslegacypod@gmail.com. All right, with that said, we're going to close the show, and hopefully we did a good enough job of easing our way back into this podcasting thing. Hopefully it wasn't too rocky for anybody.
Yeah, rugged like my voice. I don't know what the heck happened, dude. I guess I didn't talk today. Yeah. I just watched football from freaking 10 a.m. until about 8:30. And maybe yelling at my television, because like I said before, I'm a Packer fan.
Yeah.
Just took everything out of me, and I sound like a frog sense. Right now. So.
That makes sense. So you better get back into the podcast mic gym or something, like the Lakers are doing.
The magic mic.
Yeah. So we'll slowly be working our ways back up into this podcasting stuff. And we've got some exciting new things happening for this offseason, including, I don't know, maybe a new theme song, maybe a new logo. I don't know. Might be cool. You know, I'm going to go straight on, head on with this new era theme. So everybody look forward to that. And yeah, I mean, everything's going to be ramping up from here on out. And
media day.
Media day coming up. Full analysis on
interviews.
Eyebrow rolls, chin rolls, I don't know, like shrugs, all that good stuff you want to hear.
Kind of hair D'Angelo's going to have.
Exactly. What kind of sleeve Yeji Anlian's going to have.
How many new nose piercings Jordan Clarkson's going to have.
Exactly. All that good stuff. So hopefully everybody's on for the ride. Please check your iTunes subscription once again because we're back. So let's do this. Once again, follow us on Twitter at Lakers Legacy Pod. Please rate and review us on iTunes because, like I said, the more you rate and review us, that's how many times Yeji Anlian will giggle during an interview this season because somebody will be tickling him in on his left left back earlobe.
Is that left what you said? Back, yeah, left yeah. earlobe, left earlobe.
So if you want that to happen, rate and review. With that said, we will catch you guys next time. Alan?
See you guys later.
Peace. Pushing and pulling and wishing that Messiah would be coming soon with his deliverance. I am the-